Bejare munaya munayo tagre bhagavantam adhokshajam satvam vishudham kshemaya kalpante ye nutan iha. Previously, all the great sages rendered service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Due to his existence above the three modes of material nature, they worshipped him to become free from material conditions and thus derive the ultimate benefit. Whoever follows such great authorities is also eligible for liberation from the material world. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The purpose of performing religion is neither to profit by material gain, nor to get the simple knowledge of discerning matter from spirit. The ultimate aim of religious performances is to release oneself from the material bondage and regain the life of freedom in the transcendental world where the personality of Godhead is the supreme person. Translation. Previously, all the great sages rendered service unto the personality of Godhead due to his existence above the three modes of material nature. They worshipped him to become free from material conditions and thus derive the ultimate benefit. Whoever follows such great authorities is also eligible for liberation from the material world. Here we find the real wealth of this great land of India. Here we find the greatest contribution that is most urgently, desperately needed throughout this planet Earth. To understand the true essence of Sanatana Dharma. The greatness of India is in its spiritual heritage. Our Guru Maharaj, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, in 1951, he was in Ujjain, and he was asked to speak on the meaning of nonviolence, ahimsa. It happened to be the birth anniversary of Mohandas Gandhi, so many people were assembled. And he explained that to forcibly interfere with a person's natural rights is nonviolent, is violence. It is every living being's God-given right for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. To interfere with that right in any living being is violence. It is everyone's right. It is everyone's nature to seek liberation. to seek freedom from suffering, freedom from birth and death. This is the path of religion. Sanatana Dharma is the essence of every great religion in the world. And the truth and the pure form of Sanatana Dharma is to give everyone the chance to develop pure love of God and to never have to suffer the pangs of material existence again. And Guru Maharaj explained, for anyone to mislead someone from this path, that is violence, the greatest violence. And it is that violence that is killing the world. It is that violence, even in the name of religion, that is the cause of so much suffering and death. How is it that Muslims and Hindus are fighting, Hindus and Sikhs are fighting, Hindus and Buddhists are fighting, Muslims and Jews are fighting, Muslims and Christians are fighting, Christians and Jews are fighting, Christians and Christians are fighting? It is because religion has been reduced to simply so many justifications for materialistic life and false ego or ahankar. But Sanatana Dharma means to get rid of all these upadis, all these material designations. You are not this body. You are not male or female, or Hindu or Muslim, or Jew or Christian, or Jain or Parsi. Nor are you black or white, or high caste or low caste. Every living being is part of God. Mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. And as part of God, every living being has the eternal right to know God, to love God, and to be liberated in His loving service. Vijavanaya sampani brahmani gavihasti ni suni chaiva supaki cha pandita samadarshanaha. That a person who understands these principles, he sees everyone with equal vision and is the servant and the well-wisher of all living beings. It is only this state of consciousness that brings peace and happiness in our life. And there's no other substitute. No amount of money. No amount of fame and distinction. No amount of conquering your opponents. No amount of good health can be a substitute for the need, the longing of the soul, which is that liberated state of love. Love of God and love of all God's creation. And to create a society, whether it's within our own family or within our own nation, that is misleading people from that path, that is not allowing people to understand their natural spiritual right to know God and to love God, that is violence. Today, all over the world, in the name of politics, in the name of education, in the name of even philanthropy, in the name of religion, we find incredible violence. Guru Maharaj spoke to these people, and he cited some histories of the greatness of Indian culture. He explained how there was a king. His name was Raj Krishna Chandra. He was from Krishna Nagar in Bengal. This was about 100 years ago. And he had an advisor who was a Brahmin, who lived without a home. He and his wife just lived in the forest. And the king was getting so much counseling. Whenever he needed to know anything, he would ask him. So the king went to him and said, "I have so much wealth, let me give you something." He said, "What do I need?" "I do not need anything." He said, "But you're in poverty. What do you eat?" He said, "My disciples, every day they bring me a little rice. My wife cooks it. She collects some wood. She builds a fire. We have a pot. She makes the rice. And you see that tamarind tree? I climb the tamarind tree, pick some of the leaves, add it to the rice. It's very nice. I do not require anything you have. You require what I have, transcendental knowledge, because I'm happy and you're not. I'm fearless and you're always afraid." And then he cited the, what was the king's name? Chandragupta. His prime minister was Chanakya Pandit. Chandragupta was a very great king, huge empire. Chanakya Pandit, his moral instructions to this day throughout India and the world, people are reading and being inspired. He lived in a little straw hut and he slept on the ground. And Maharaj Chandragupta used to come and offer him, "Please, take a bed. Let me build you a nice house. Let me give you something." Chanakya Pandit said, "I have everything. God is providing more than what I need." "And I am providing what you need, an understanding of the goal of life and the higher principles of human civilization." But today, even in our own families, parents, they're worried if their children become too spiritual. And they're worried if they're not spiritual enough. They're worried if they do not adopt religion, then they will be cast into the deep abyss of degradation that is all over society. Dating, illicit sex, drugs, intoxications, gambling. These things are all around us today. Unless our children have a basic spiritual understanding, which will give them a philosophical awareness of why morality is important, then they can easily fall into this syndrome, which culminates in terrible suffering and confusion, bewilderment, no goal, no purpose to life than just the temporary moment-by-moment pleasures of the senses. But if they become too spiritual, then the parents try to stop them. They're afraid they might become detached. Guru Maharaj, when he was living in India, he used to approach so many religious people. "You have 4 sons. Give me just 1 of your sons to make a perfect Brahmin to spread Sanatana Dharma all over the world. You have 3 other children. Just give me 1 to train to be a preacher who can save the world from suffering and ignorance." "Swamiji, don't you understand how many bills I have to pay and how much money I need and how much I need every son to provide for the family?" Then Guru Maharaj realized that India is coming to a hopeless condition because it is not understanding the beauty, the glory of its own spiritual heritage. Although still today, it is by far the most religious country in the world. the true depth of understanding of what its spiritual basis is, what the Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching, is being little by little forgotten. It is explained in this verse by Srila Sutta Goswami that the great sages of the past, they rendered service to Bhagwan, and they worshipped him to become free from material conditions, not to improve their material conditions. To improve your material conditions is called Kaitava Dharma, cheating religion. It is religion, but in the end, you're cheated. Because however nice your material conditions become, how long will it remain? And will you find peace? Will you find ecstasy and love in any situation of this world? Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojata Janayatyasu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yadahoyitakam. The Bhagavatam teaches that when we learn to worship Vasudev in a spirit of devotion, we automatically acquire all knowledge and detachment. Savai pungso paro dharamo yato bhakira hokshaje ahoitaki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. The supreme occupation for all humanity is that which brings about unmotivated, uninterrupted, loving service to the Lord. Because only that will satisfy the soul. You can have everything else, but if you do not have love of God, you will never find true happiness. Sanatan Dharma means that process which purifies our consciousness and revives this natural love of God within our hearts. Because that love liberates us from all the limitations of this body and this mind, which is the cause of all misery. Recently, just 3 days back, we were in a place, Porbandar. It is between Dwarka and Prabhaskshetra, where the Somnath Mandir is. And there is a very holy place there. It is the place of the house of the Brahmin Sudhama. Sudhama Vipra was a very poor man. Not only was he poor, he was literally starving. It is explained that his wife, she saw that he was emaciated, his limbs were shaking. They had no proper food to eat. They had no proper house to live in. She felt compassion for him, but she was also in the same condition. But actually, they were the wealthiest people in all of creation because they had devotion to Krishna. But still, as a servant, you want to provide for the body, mind, and soul of your beloved. That is natural. If you love someone, you love everything about that person. You love their body, you love their mind, and you love their soul. Just like our Gurudev, he was very much concerned always with the body, mind, and soul of every disciple. I have often told the story of one time there was a Guru Puja. There were thousands of people singing his glories, offering him aarti, giving him hundreds of flower garlands. And one devotee came to offer flowers, and he had an infection on his foot. And in the middle of the beautiful Guru Puja, Gurudev called him over and said, "What happened to your foot?" He said, "It is cut, and now it is infected." He said, "What medicine are you taking?" He said, "I am not taking any medicine." So he called for one of his disciples. He said, "Please give me 50 rupees. Got 50 rupees. He wrote down, "You get this medicine. You put it on your foot and put bandage." And then he sent him off to the medical store. So this devotee was thinking, such love. He's giving me his books. He's giving me the holy name of God. He's giving me his pravachans because he loves my soul. And he's giving me 50 rupees because he loves my body also, because he knows my soul's living in this body. To love means complete love. You cannot, if you love someone, you will not neglect their body. You will not speak sweet words encouraging them to show love to their mind. But if that's all you do, then your love is incomplete. Unless you love that person's soul and show love for that person's soul by giving that person the understanding and the encouragement to surrender to God. That is love for the soul. That is complete love. And that is the greatness of the culture of India. We have so many fantastic examples. Sudama Vipra is one such example. His wife was thinking that we're completely peaceful and ecstatic in service to God, but we're starving. Krishna's your friend. Go to him. He'll be happy. He loves his devotees. Krishna's greatest pleasure is to please his devotees. We don't want much, just enough to survive. Please go. But he was thinking, how can I ask God for something for myself? I am his servant. A servant does not ask master, "Give me this." A servant asks the master, "What can I do for you?" But to please his wife, he decided to go. But really, his reason was to take the opportunity to have the blessed darshan of Sri Krishna. So from his home, he walked to Dwarka. And when he approached the beautiful palace of Krishna, where he was living with his principal queen, Rukmini, he was struck with wonder to see its elegance, its opulence. No one was allowed to just come into Krishna's palace except the Brahmins and the devotees. They were given orders that any Brahmin or devotee, you give them a royal escort into my palace. Everyone else would have to be screened. So when Sudama entered, Krishna got up from Rukmini's bed where he was sitting, and he embraced him. And then he sat him on his own seat, And Krishna, with his own hands, began to wash his feet. And after washing the feet of his devotee, Sudama, he took that water and sprinkled it upon his own head. And then he offered nice drink and nice fruit. And then he offered the aarti with ghee lamp and incense. And meanwhile, Rukmini, with the chamara fan, was giving a pleasing fan to Sudama Vipraji. In this way, here is Dwarkadish, the husband of the goddess of fortune, living in opulence which could not even be, even Indra could not compete with. And Krishna is the supreme controller of this entire existence. He is Bhagavan. And he is embracing, washing the feet, offering puja, and worshiping his devotee, who was wearing torn, old cloth, who was skinny due to starvation. And the ladies of the palace, they were struck with wonder. How is it that Krishna embraced this poor Brahmin who has dirt all over his body and holes in his clothes and whose bones are sticking out from every limb? Krishna spoke to Sudama Vipra that today I am most fortunate because you have come to bless and purify my home. Krishna is revealing what Vedic culture is all about. Vedic culture is not simply to go to pravachans, to hear Bhagavad Saptaha, or to hear Ramayan recital, or to hear some Bhagavad Gita philosophical explanations. The Vedic culture is to put these principles into life, which begins by giving the highest credibility, respect to those people who have given everything in the service of God and in the service of humanity. That is Vedic culture. Whoever you are, if you cannot surrender in love to respecting, worshiping, and serving the sadhus, then you have no real spiritual culture at all. Then Krishna began to discuss with Sudama Vipraji about their pastimes together in their youth. Do you remember when we were staying at the ashram of Sandipani Muni? He was our Gurudev. And how fortunate we were to learn from him. Because after all, without accepting a proper spiritual master, inquiring submissively and rendering service, no one has ever understood the truth. That all our own conceptions of God and Dharma are all so many hallucinations and illusions, unless they are confirmed by the great souls. To inquire submissively and render service to such great souls is the path of truth, Krishna told Sudama. And Gurudev taught us so many wonderful things about the Vedic scriptures. And he was so merciful, he allowed us to be his menial servant. Do you remember, Sudama Vipraji, when our guru's wife asked us to collect wood for the sacred fire? And we went out together into the forest, and as we were collecting wood, see, such a menial service. We find that Krishna, he is worshipped by all the demigods. Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Surya, they are all worshipping him. But he is collecting wood for his spiritual master, just to set as principle the path of Dharma. And that day, as we were collecting the wood, it began to rain very hard. It wasn't just a rain, it was a devastation. And it became very cold. And the winds began to blow. And it became dark. And dust was, because of high winds, the dust was flying everywhere. And we were lost. And we were freezing cold. We could not find our way back. And we held each other's hands and we were both trembling. And we spent the entire night in that condition. And the next morning, Gurudev with his disciples came into the forest to try to find us. And when they finally spotted us and saw our condition, Gurudev was so happy. He gave us his blessing. He said, because in your service to me, you were willing to endure so much pain and suffering and even risk your lives. Therefore, you have actually understood the true path of Dharma. There is a famous saying, if you do not have something to die for, you have nothing worthwhile to live for. If we are not willing to give our lives in pursuance of truth, our life really has not much value at all. The value of a man's life is not how many stocks he has in the exchange, not how much bank balance he has, not how many children, grandchildren, or great-grandchildren he has, not how many people say flattering words to him. The value of a man's life is to the extent that man is willing to give his life for truth. Because it is only truth that endures. Nashito vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyato. Krishna says in Gita that which is true, that which is real, has no cessation. And that which is an illusion, that which is unreal, has no endurance. It is destroyed by the power of time. So Gurudev was so pleased, Sandipani Muni was so happy with Sri Krishna and Sudama, because simply to get a little wood for him, they were willing to undergo so much trouble. And he blessed them that all the Vedic knowledge I have revealed to you, you will always remember and you will be able to put into your life. Knowledge without practical application has no substance. There is a famous saying, Lord Chaitanya said this about Haridas Thakur. He said, some people, they speak very nicely the truth, but they do not practice what they preach. And some people, they do not know much, They have not much philosophy, but they practice the truth. But the most compassionate persons are those who can teach the truth by their words and by their life's example. So they were discussing beautiful memories like this. And Krishna said, I think you have brought something for me. Sudama's wife gave him 4 palmfuls of chipped rice. When Sudama was about to go to Dwarka, he said, I have to bring Krishna a gift. And they looked around the house. There was not a single thing in the entire house to offer Krishna. She had to go out to neighbors to beg. And after begging for some time, she finally obtained 4 palmfuls of chipped rice. Chipped rice is a commodity that anyone could have at any time. We were explaining to the devotees at Purabandhara how when I was living like a sadhu traveling around India, at one time I was in Ayodhya and I was living on the banks of the river Sarayu. And I was living with some sadhus who were very austere. They were just performing very difficult tapasyas. Just sleeping on the ground, not even sleeping, just living on the ground and just doing japa and doing dhyana and reading the shastras all day long. But every day someone would come and give a few palmfuls of chipped rice. Because what does chipped rice cost? It costs nothing. Even the poorest beggar can get some chipped rice without any problem. And we used to just take the water from the Sarayu and mix it with the chipped rice, and we would eat. And we were very happy. We didn't need any money. We were surviving nicely, just chanting, dancing, discussing Ram Leela. Sometimes very wealthy people, they have big mansion and they have, what do they call it, skylights, where they have windows on the ceiling so you could see the stars. Or sometimes they hire wonderful artists to paint the moon and the stars. Anyways, we were living very opulently. We had such a skylight. We had the whole star, sky above us. Spacious, elegant. It was really opulence. And we were eating nice chipped rice. But it's the poorest man's food. And Sudama Vipra was thinking, look at this Krishna. He is living in this palace with the goddess of fortune. And he's eating the finest foods. All the furniture is made out of gold and silver and jewels. How can I give him chipped rice? But Krishna snatched the chipped rice. He said, I want. And he ate one morsel. And Krishna said that, now that I have taken this morsel of your chipped rice, not only has it satisfied me, but it has satisfied the entire universe. It is said when you water the root of a tree, every part of the tree is nourished. When you put food in the stomach, every limb of the body is nourished. When we satisfy Krishna, the whole creation is nourished. But if we fail to satisfy Krishna, it is like watering every part of the tree without the root. The tree will die. Rukmini stopped Krishna from taking more. She said, what you have eaten is already enough to bestow the ultimate benedictions upon Sudama. Krishna does not care for anything but our love. Patram pushpam palam toyo yome bhakta prayashtat. Whether we offer Krishna grand, wonderful temples, or whether we offer him a little chipped rice, if it is offered in a spirit of love, devotion, and surrender, he accepts it with great pleasure. And what is the perfection of our life? When Krishna accepts our offering. So Sudama left that palace the next morning. And as he was leaving, tears were flowing from his eyes. He was in so much pleasure. How wonderful is this Krishna? He is Bhagavan. He is the master of the entire universe. And yet, who am I? I am nothing. And yet he embraced me. He sat me on his own throne. He washed my feet. He offered aarti to me. He fed me food with his own hands. This is the nature of God's love for his devotee. God becomes subordinate. God becomes the servant of a devotee who has surrendered everything in his loving service. The impersonalists, they read the scriptures scrutinizingly. Sometimes they go to the Himalayas to engage in deep, deep forms of meditation and samadhi. Their goal is to become God. But here we find Sudama. He became better than God. God became his servant. Krishna's bhakta vatsal. He always becomes the servant of his devotee. And he wanted to teach all of us that the perfection of life is to learn to love and serve his devotees. Tonight, our old friend Nikki is here. He is a very great servant of the Alcoholics Anonymous organization. He's a Christian man. In his faith, the last teaching of Lord Jesus Christ to his disciples was they were all seated at a table to take dinner on Passover. And he told them that tonight, on this very night, I will be arrested and tomorrow I will be killed. But I want, so this is our last chance to be together. And I want to teach you a good lesson. And he went with water and he began to wash the feet of each of his disciples. And as he came to Peter, Peter said, "My Lord, I cannot let you wash my feet. You are my master." He said, "You must allow me, because I want to show all of you that if your guru, if your Lord loves you so much that he wants to serve and wash the feet of his devotees, how much you should love and serve each other." If we cannot show love to Krishna's children, who he loves, we cannot show love to Krishna. You can perform the most elaborate rituals in the temple, but if you are not a loving servant of his devotees, none of your pompous rituals means anything to him. In the English language, it is said, "Love me, love my dog." If you want to show love for the Father, do something nice for the son or the daughter, and he'll never forget it. You do something nice for the father, he'll forget it after some time. But you do something nice for those he loves, he'll never forget. So Sudama was thinking how much Krishna loves his devotees. What type of Lord is this? Who wants to worship any Lord that is not so merciful? And then he remembered his wife. She sent him on a mission to ask for some basic necessities for their material life, but he did not ask for anything. How could I ask Krishna? I am his servant. How could I demand anything of him? I am meant for his pleasure. He is not meant for my pleasure. But when he reached the vicinity of his home, he saw a wonderful transformation. His little broken down straw hut was no longer there. There was a wonderful castle bedecked with jewels. There were parks with auspicious trees, and there were lakes with clear water, and there were swans and peacocks and parrots and all auspicious birds singing. And there were all sorts of celestial beings walking in fine clothes, laughing and smiling throughout these parks. And Sudama was thinking, where am I? And then a beautiful musical band came out playing auspicious instruments and singing wonderful songs, glorifying him. And they came to greet him. And then his wife came out. She was so beautiful. She had nice clothes, nice jewelry. She was nice and clean. She was smiling. And when she saw her husband, she was speechless. Only tears could come to her eyes. And when he saw her, he could only think that this is the grace of Krishna. I didn't ask him for anything. All I had to offer him was some chipped rice. But this is what he has given me in return. This is the love of my Lord. He was speechless. The husband and the wife simply looked at each other as tears were flowing from their eyes, and they silently entered into the palace. And when he came into his own room, there was no lights like this, but all the beautiful decorated walls were inlaid with jewels, and those jewels were giving off so much light. And there was no need for electricity or fire. And all of the furniture was made out of hand-carved ivory. And his bed was covered with silken sheets as white as the foam on milk. And all he could think of, who could understand the love of God? Sudama and his wife, they lived in that house in exactly the same consciousness that they lived in the straw hut. There was no difference. They didn't care this way or that way. They were willing to serve Krishna and love Krishna under any situation. This home, Sudama and his wife thought, it is all the grace of God. It is all his divine gift. It is all meant for his service. They lived the rest of their lives in that beautiful palace, and never once did they even consider taking anything for their own selfish enjoyment. Everything was used simply in the service of Krishna and his devotees. In this way, Sudama Vipra taught how one could be totally peaceful in transcendental ecstasy, whether he is living in a palace or living under a tree. If you cannot be satisfied living under a tree, you'll never find satisfaction even living in a palace. Because real satisfaction is from within. If you are satisfied within, you can be satisfied in any situation in life. And if you are not satisfied within, no arrangement will bring you any real fulfillment. But yet people are so mad, so anxious to acquire more and more and more in this world that they totally neglect the starvation of their own hearts. And therefore, they really have nothing to give their children or grandchildren that's of any true substance. This is Sanatana Dharma, this understanding. Whatever our situation in life is, we must learn how to utilize that arrangement in God's loving service, in the pure remembrance of the Supreme Lord, in the loving service of the Lord and his devotees. This is the perfection of life. The Bhagavatam is here explaining that the great sages, they worship the Lord to become free from material conditions. To become free from material conditions does not mean to give them up. It means to not be attached. Whatever situation we're in, if God gives us great abundance, don't abandon it. Use it. It's like Arvind Bhai Mafatlal, he just received an award from the International Lions Club as the Humanitarian of the Year, because he is doing these so much spiritual, moral and social services in Chitrakoot, performing tens and thousands of eye operations for people going blind, giving them all Lord Ram's prasad, kirtan going on at all times, feeding sadhus, wonderful temple worship, nice hospital for the body, mind and soul. And everything he's doing was under the order of his guru. And because he is doing the will of his guru, he is blessed by God. And even the Lions Club, which is not known to be very spiritual, they have some philanthropic sincerity, no doubt. But even they, one of the most powerful philanthropic groups in the entire planet Earth, they have recognized, given him the most esteemed award of the year. What does this mean? This means, like Sudama Vipra, if Krishna gives you wealth, use it. But if you use it for yourself, then it becomes like, the more wealth you have, the more it becomes like a big weight on your head. It's like people are working so hard to collect more and more rocks to put it on their heads. Their heads are cracking with anxiety. And yet they're thinking, the solution is some more rocks. but my head is hurting so much. I'm in so much anxiety. The solution is more rocks. In this way, they're just collecting rocks, and their heads are cracking, and their backs are breaking. And they're thinking, I'm still suffering. I need more rocks. Huh? That's material civilization. There's a story of a man who was carrying all these rocks on one shoulder, and his shoulder was paining terribly. And Krishna appeared to him and said, I'll give you any benediction you like. He could have asked for promotion to Vaikuntha. He could have asked for liberation. He could have asked for pure love. He could have asked for anything. What did he ask for? He said, Krishna, my shoulder is paining so much because of this burden of rocks I'm carrying. Please transfer it to my other shoulder. This is materialistic religion. When we ask God for material benedictions, we're asking him to just put more rocks on us. It's very prestigious when you're carrying so many rocks. People say, oh, look at that person, how many rocks? But the intelligent people, they think, the person's an ass. An ass can carry all these rocks. But of course, amongst asses, the person who could carry the most rocks is the best. So we are living in a civilization of asses, mudha. Namam duskritanor mudha. But here we find someone, he has many rocks. But they're not a burden on his own head. He's using them to provide wonderful facilities for others. In this way, we should be satisfied. We should work hard in whatever our occupation may be, but we should be satisfied with whatever the result is and use whatever result comes in the service of the Lord, in the service of his devotees, and for the ultimate welfare of humanity. This is Vedic culture. This peace, this compassion, this is Vedic culture. And it is the purpose of all of our japa, it is the purpose of all of our pujas, it is the purpose of all our rituals, it is the purpose of all our charity to develop these qualities. And the greatest of all sacrifices in this age of Kali Yuga, to awaken this pure state of divine consciousness, is the chanting of God's name. And the greatest charity in all of creation is to induce another person to find that treasure of love within their own heart by chanting God's name. And it's free for everyone. We simply have to accept it. The mercy of Krishna coming through his name and coming through the association of sadhus is the greatest wealth in this whole creation. And what is the price? Simply to accept it. Whether we're young or old, whether we're scholars or illiterate, whether we're Brahmins or untouchables, whether we're rich or poor, God is great. He gives everyone the opportunity to perfect their lives. Simply learn how to serve the sadhus, the true sadhus, those who are dedicating their lives and sacrificing everything for the betterment of others. That is sadhu. It's not a question of dress. Learn to associate with such saintly people and chant the name of God. Accept these gifts and your life will be perfect. You will find real wealth, real purpose, real fulfillment, real love. And the greatest thing is you will have something that is really worth giving your loved ones. You can give them a life of peace and love and eternal fulfillment. So it is for this purpose that the great Vedic scriptures and all the great saintly persons of the past have taught us why we should chant the name of God. Coming together, like this evening, at this auspicious place, is really our great fortune. Hridayananda and Radha Priya, Hrishikesh and Rekha Mafatlal, they have made nice arrangements for us. And each one of you, just to come this evening, you could have done so many other things, but just that you have come is a great contribution. It is a great offering of love. And to hear submissively and to apply these principles to our life will give us the greatest wealth by which we can give others. We can give them the means by which they become free from material conditions. Whatever material condition we have today, know for certain that it will culminate in old age, disease, and death. Is this such a great thing? But the chanting of the name of God is the supreme benediction for all humanity, because it awakens the heart to its natural pure condition, which is beyond birth, beyond death, beyond all the miseries and sufferings of this world. But we must learn to chant the name of God sincerely, with proper attention. It is not simply a ritual. It is an offering of our consciousness in surrender to the Supreme Absolute Truth. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the avatar of Sri Krishna in this age of Kali Yuga, he has come by his own example to teach why and how we can chant the holy names and attain the perfection of life. And he taught this Sankirtan that a human being is basically a social animal. We can chant the holy names, japa, privately to ourselves. We must do that every day to purify our consciousness, to connect our minds with the supreme truth, Krishna. But along with that, it is absolutely essential to chant congregationally, to bring about love and trust in God's name amongst men and women of this world. So he taught that when the leader is singing, everyone with folded palms, with great humility and respect, should simply hear the name. Like a person who is dwelling in the desert and who is starving of thirst and whose mouth is parched dry and is on the verge of death, we should receive the holy name as the nectarine, life-giving, ambrosial waters that is entering through our ears to quench the thirst of our heart. This is how we should hear the holy name. And when we respond, we should call out God's name like a baby crying for its mother. Ultimately, in this world, there's no other shelter but Krishna. And we desperately require his shelter. In all of his shelter, all of his mercy, all of his glory is incarnated by his mercy through his name. Therefore, we raise our arms, simply offering our life in the service of the holy name, reaching out like a child for his beloved mother. In this way, we should call the name of God. So we would like to invite everyone to participate in this wonderful gift of Lord Sri Chaitanya, the conclusion and essence of all the scriptures can be realized simply by learning to take shelter of the name of God. Everyone, please stand up.